Welcome to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage, your go-to podcast for mastering the self-storage industry. Join host Michael Cunningham and his son Dylan Cunningham as they share insider knowledge, firsthand experiences, and practical advice. Each episode, they dive into real stories from lucrative deals and strategic renovations to the challenges and pitfalls that await. Whether you're a seasoned operator or new to the industry, learn how to succeed, avoid common traps, and seize great opportunities. Tune in to hear their journey, lessons learned, and secrets to making your storage facility a success. Unlock the potential of self-storage with us.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage. I'm Dylan Cunningham, and today we're going to be diving into one of the most critical but often overlooked parts of building a self-storage facility: underground utilities and finished grading. With me, as always, is my dad, Mike Cunningham. Dad, before we get into the details, why is underground work such an important part of the development process?
Yeah, Dylan, underground construction is what ensures long-term functionality of the site. If drainage, electrical, or fire suppression isn't planned properly, you can face major issues down the line. It's not just about burying pipes or wires. It's about the future-proofing of your facility, so you don't have to go back and fix costly mistakes. But hey, before we dive too much into this episode, as always, our podcast is for entertainment purposes and intended as a springboard for anybody interested in self-storage or potentially considering building their own self-storage facility. Always consult with professionals that specialize in this type of work before you invest.
All right, let's start with stormwater management. Where do you buy drainage inlets or DIs, and how are they built?
Yeah, so we typically buy our drainage inlets from concrete precast manufacturers that cater to commercial projects. They're built with reinforced concrete and have steel grates rated for heavy traffic. You can custom build these if needed, but most projects we work with use standard sizes. All of the DIs are built at different heights to ensure proper flow. And so typically at your lowest point, you're going to have your deepest drainage inlet to allow the proper flow of water. So everything's going to drain, at least in California, to not just the stormwater drain. In California, we're required to keep all the water that comes on our property on our property. So we have to build detention ponds either above ground or below ground, and the water is going to percolate back into the ground and continue to build the aquifers and the water table of the area that you're in. And we'll probably do a future podcast just on stormwater detention. But I mean, that's kind of the initial essence of it.
Gotcha. So what type of pipe is used for underground stormwater drainage?
Yeah, so in the past it used to be metal, but we're using all the HDPE, which is the high-density polyurethane. It's a corrugated pipe. It's durable, flexible, and resistant to corrosion. Sometimes you have to use a reinforced concrete pipe. Sometimes we've had to tie into like the existing municipality. If they've got a stormwater pond close by, they're going to typically not be using the corrugated plastic. They're going to be polyurethane. They're going to end up, most of that's all going to be with your a reinforced concrete pipe.
Gotcha. And what would you say is the typical depth of the trenches? And you know, what safety precautions do we have to be taking while trenching?
Yeah, so you try not to, you know, most of the time you're not going too deep on this, because the minute you get to a certain depth, now you're opening up a whole nother problem in terms of, you know, safety with your guys. But the typical trenches for doing all the stormwater are 3 to 5 feet. Obviously, safety is crucial. Anything deeper than 5 foot requires trench shoring. or a trench box to prevent cave-ins. And, you know, this is all like OSHA regulated and, you know, highly regulated in California. And so the last thing would be, you know, whenever you're trenching, you always have to call 811 in California, which is going to, they're going to send all the municipalities out and they're going to mark so where you're digging is safe. You're not going to be digging up any electrical lines or plumbing or anything like that.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, yeah. So in our case, when we're doing the trenching and we're putting the DIs in and then we put the pipe in, a lot of people don't, or at least the questions that we've been asked in the past, like how are you attaching the plastic pipe to the drainage inlets? And I know you were on this last project working in the trenches, literally. how is that done?
Yeah, so that's a great question because, yeah, these pipes are plastic and the DIs were made of concrete. So most connections in the DIs are grouted with concrete. The DIs come with these kind of knockouts on the sides that allow for different pipe sizes. So we kind of just took, you know, a hammer and just started banging out these little knockouts and then, you know, tried to make it as, you know, perfectly round as possible as you can. But, you know, you also need to properly bed the pipes as well with compacted sand or gravel. And, you know, this is to prevent shifting over time.
Yeah, so most of this is inspected. So prior to us filling back in the trenches, you know, you're going to call for an inspection and they're going to make sure that you've got, we were building in sandy loam, but they're gonna, if you're not in a sandy loam, like you're in clay or a base, they're going to ask you to put a sand base on it so that the pipe has something nice and stable to sit on before you start backfilling. And so those are typical important aspects. And then they're going to want to see how the pipe was attached to the DI. And as you mentioned, you're using a concrete mortar base to encompass it into the DI. The DI has these circumferenced knockouts that allow for different pipe size, as you mentioned. So
exactly.
So I would say that that's a pretty good overview, kind of like the, you know, quick down and dirty aspect of installing the DI and the pipe work. And then again, I think we'll have a different podcast that kind of talks about where all this water is going and how we're handling it on our sites in California. But we'll kind of move on. Again, you were very hands-on in this last project, especially on the underground stuff. When we were planning out all the electrical underground and utility runs, I mean, how did you coordinate for, you know, the electricity, low voltage, communication, water, sewer, fire? I mean, it was like a maze of all this different stuff going everywhere.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit overwhelming in the beginning, but, you know, you got to start with a utility layout plan from, you know, our civil engineer. This definitely helped us place conduits, pipes, and junction boxes before concrete went down. So electrical and low voltage lines were placed, you know, in separate conduits. And then you had your sewer and water lines that were planned to avoid unnecessary bends as well. We also had to ensure we weren't wasting valuable self-storage space by placing a pole room or a data hub in the wrong spot. So that's something that you definitely have to think about and plan out before you just start laying pipe.
So what's a pull room or a data room? I mean, are these terms that are we use or are these, you know, so help us out on that.
Yeah, so a pull room is gonna help you out when you're pulling wire. You don't wanna be pulling wire from, you know, 500 yards away from where you started. So we have a pull room that are kind of strategically placed in the center of our property so that you're only pulling half that distance and then, you know, you're able to pop it out in one of those pipes and, you know, it goes right back in and you're able to pull another, whatever, 250 yards from that pull room as well.
Okay, right on. So there was a lot of pipes to deal with. That's pretty typical for self-storage, especially when every building has lighting and security, smoke detectors, the fire suppression system. And, In our case, we're going to do no key. So we're pre-wiring for no key. So how did you keep track of all those different pipes?
Yeah, so no key, man, we're really excited about this. Even though, you know, we're kind of talking way into the future, but it's it just gets me excited to think about what the future holds for self-storage. And for anyone that doesn't know about Nokey, Nokey is basically a software that you basically, you know, you have to wire to all of your roll of doors in your facility, and your tenants will no longer be needing a physical key anymore. They will be able to lock and unlock their self-storage unit with the app on their cellular device. But yeah, back to your question. We create detailed plans and color code everything. I think that's pretty important. We mark both the plans and the actual pipes with the color, we just used colored spray paint. We just spray painted them at the penetration points, so it's easy to identify what is what. That way, when it's time to connect everything, there's really no second guessing.
Yeah. If you walked our site, it's pretty cool. Everything's color coded, and you know kind of exactly where everything is going to go. And I saw you put a binder together, and you had every building in that binder all separate, all color coded. And so what happens is you're putting all this pipe down early in the project, and then, you know, you're really not going back to it for months later. And if you're not staying on top of what all these pipes are or identifying what they are, you're going to be lost. It's buried, and
exactly,
all you're seeing is where it's penetrating at the building. So very important.
Exactly. We also took some videos as well. I mean, I think, you know, from a video, you know, maybe you won't be able to tell exactly what each pipe is, but it definitely helps refresh your memory. And then again, color coordinating is crucial. Like you said, in our process right now, we haven't dealt with those electrical pipes in a while. And just being able to go back on that binder and some pictures I took, and then just the spray paint on the actual pipes, is definitely going to help refresh your memory when it's time to start pulling wire.
Okay, so we've covered stormwater, all the drainage inlets off the property. And we just went over all the piping that's going to be for all your electrical and low voltage and your water lines. Let's talk about fire. What about the fire protection? Can you talk about like hydrants and materials? I know we had thrust block inspections and pressure testing. Can you tell the audience a little bit about what these things are? And again, I would preface here that, you know, most people aren't going to do their own fire. And, we did a lot of this stuff in-house, but we still hire an underground company, do our pressure testing for us and stuff. And I'll let you elaborate on that, Dylan. But it is just good to know about this stuff. Again, a lot of people are just writing the check to have these guys come out, and they really don't understand all the details of what really goes into this. So maybe you can, you know, elaborate a little bit more on that for us, Dylan.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a lot to unpack, and I'm sure you can add as much information as you are aware of as well. But fire hydrants are placed based on the city fire codes. Usually they're within 300 feet of each other. We use AWWA C900 pipe because it's easy to work with and extremely, extremely durable. The thrust box blocks that you mentioned, these are the concrete reinforcements. These were poured at major fittings to prevent movement under pressure. Basically, whenever you have like a 90-degree turn or a T or even a 45-degree angle, these are where you're going to see those thrust blocks.
And sorry to interrupt you, but it sounds like it's a block. Are you putting a block in there, or can you elaborate on what that is? This is kind of a really important thing. The fire hydrant is under extreme pressure. And we could talk about that. The testing, it's, you know, 200 PSI. This is a lot of pressure. And so talk about the thrust blocks a little bit more detail.
Right. So we'll show a picture as well. But basically, you kind of create a form with, you know, a couple pieces of wood. And we're pouring concrete into this form, and it's kind of pressed up against the edge of the trench, pretty much. And these thrust blocks are trying to make sure that the pipes are as stable as possible, trying to minimize the movement, pretty much.
Yeah, perfect. No, that's exactly what the purpose of these are. But, you know, skimping on these is really never a good advice either. You want to overbuild Definitely. These and over-engineer these thrust blocks just because of the pressure. Again, based on the soil that you're in. I mean, if you've got some really, really tough, hard packed soil to begin with, you're fine. But if we were in sandy loam, we want to make sure that we're just over-engineering these thrust blocks.
Exactly.
So I kind of cut you off the pressure testing. Can you elaborate on what that is and how to go about that?
Yeah. So for the pressure testing, it's done at 200 PSI, and that's for 2 hours. And it's a really long time, and it kind of gets your nerves racing a little bit for those 2 hours, but it's really just to confirm that there are no leaks before you start backfilling. So, you know, we had the underground company come out and do the 200 PSI test for the full 2 hours.
That was why we kind of spent a little extra time on these thrust blocks, because one of our blocks failed under the 200 pound pressure. So it was like, we had just reached 200 pounds, and I think we were holding for about 15 minutes, and one of the thrust blocks failed, and it's really scary. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous as well. The pipe flew out of the trench, and just not a good look. I would say it's an ugly story in self storage. Not everything goes as planned and smooth, but so we had to stop that whole process, unbury that pipe setup, redo the thrust block, and then, you know, bring that crew back at a different date. And so, yeah, these just costs that aren't, you know, typically equated into the budget, but it's part of construction. Not everything goes super, super smooth.
Exactly.
So you mentioned pre-wiring for Noki. Sounds great, but why'd you do this, and give us your thoughts?
Yeah, so we are going to be pre-wiring for Noki smart. These are the Noki smart locks. So even if we don't use them right away, it's definitely smart to have the infrastructure in place. Retrofitting is way more expensive later on in the future. So we believe that the manless and semi-manless facilities are the future. So we're designing with that in mind. Noki, it provides standard wiring diagrams for pre-wiring, which makes the process much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in our case, we reached out to our Noki rep for Northern California and said, hey, we're in the process of building this property. We don't have the budget currently for the Noki. But we want to pre-wire for it, and they sent us out a wiring diagram of what they need, the wire sizes and all the different runs. And so we went ahead and pre-piped for all that and are going to pre-wire for Noki. So perfect. So at this point, we've kind of covered, obviously we went over this once before, but we covered the DIs, we went into fire hydrants and all the electrical piping.
Right.
I think we are done on the underground at this
point?
Yeah,
I would agree. Now that we're done with the underground utilities, what's the process for finish grading?
Yeah, so finish grading is where we set the final elevations. This ensures proper drainage for the DIs and detention ponds. The process includes final grading of the soil, setting the correct slopes, and compacting everything before applying the base rock.
So how do you set these elevations for the V drains?
Yeah, so we use laser levels. I mean, the one that we use is I think it's the Bosch BT-160. And we set all of our elevations with this. I'm going to say this tool is about $800, but it's, worth every penny. And this will ensure us that we have, the proper water flows towards the designated drainage inlets, If this isn't done right, obviously you're going to end up with standing water. And so we spend a lot of time in this final grading stage, making sure you know you are out there every day. This is like probably the one time that you have to just make sure every, you know, you're dotting every I, crossing every T. And I think a lot of times the final graders, you know, they're in a hurry, they're cutting corners, and we see it a lot. We'll show up at properties where there's standing water or they got water intrusion problems, but this is really the key to the future, and you really got to make sure that you're spending the proper time at this moment to make sure that everything is graded properly and draining towards your drainage inlets.
Exactly. I completely agree. So once grading is complete, do you instantly apply the base rock?
Yeah, great question. On this particular project, we did install base rock first. It just really depends on where you're at in your building cycle. We were approaching winter, and we wanted to make sure that we were you're not going to have a big muddy site, so we went ahead and applied base rock. We used 3/4-inch class 2 recycled base rock right after we finished grading to prevent erosion and stabilize the ground for construction. We use recycled base rock. It's cheaper, compacts well, and meets environmental requirements. It's cost effective, compacts really well. But the reality here is I know that it's not available everywhere. And so it's something to, first of all, you want to talk to your engineer and see if he's experienced with recycled base rocks, if he approves them for your particular site, and then you're going to want to see if there's a recycle center nearby. Obviously, transportation costs are a big factor here, and if you're going to be trucking, it's probably not going to make sense. But if it's just as close as the quarry, then in our opinion, the recycled base rock was a massive savings, almost 50%.
Wow.
And so highly recommend using a recycled base rock.
That's definitely our pro tip of the week. All right. It seems like we covered a lot today, from, you know, stormwater systems and fire protection to finished grading and base rock. Dad, you know, I always like to ask this, but what's one final piece of advice for developers going through this process?
I'd say be patient. Get it right the first time. Underground and grading might not be the most exciting part of the project, but they're the foundation for everything that follows. And trust me, mistakes here can be costly. We handle all this stuff in-house, but even if you're hiring an underground contractor, it's important to know exactly what you're paying for. Small details matter. Things like the type of base rock, like we just talked about, can add big expenses. We like to add extra conduits for future improvements. These are inexpensive ways to be able to upgrade in the future. Obviously, trenching is really expensive after the fact, and will create big headaches. Water spigots, I would say, are another thing. You know, most of the time when we look at a set of plans, it might be one or two water spigots. We like to have them all over the property. It's super easy to add when you're at this stage. So, you know, ask your contractor what it's going to cost to add a few extra water spigots. I think it's really important. It's a, you know, we're always power washing our properties, want to make sure everything looks good, and it's just nice to have a water source right by. I just say thinking ahead of these little details will save you time, money, and frustration down the road.
I completely agree. Well, I think that's it for episode 5 of The Good,
The Bad,
and The Ugly of Self-Storage. Next time, we'll cover building installation, what to expect when the steel arrives. One last thing, if you write us a review on the platform you listen from and send it to us at info@selfstoragebrokeragegroup.com, we will send you our must-have, the 50 money-saving questions to ask the professionals if you are thinking about building a self-storage facility. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Thanks for tuning in to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Self-Storage. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like us, leave a review, and share it with others. For more tips and updates, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also listen to us on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, let's unlock the potential of self-storage together.